Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of Season 2 of Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Vivek Bhattacharya. Folks, this is the end of the second season of Mint Climate Change Tracker. And the first thing I want to do on this episode is to thank you all so much for listening. Ever since I began this podcast back in November last year, I've been overwhelmed by the response that it has received from both general listeners as well as from people involved in the climate conversation in India. From scientists to activists, writers, economists, and climate policy people. Tackling the subject of climate change, and especially how it is affecting India, has been motivating my journalism for a long while now. When I got the chance to take this to a different format, like a podcast, well, it was an offer that I just couldn't refuse. While I spent the first season talking about the many different and interconnected ways that the climate crisis affects our everyday lives, I decided to do something different for the second season. The time was right to speak to some of the most important voices on climate change in the country. It was the correct way to go because speaking with my 12 guests on a variety of subjects helped me learn so much about global warming and India. The COVID-19 pandemic was raging through the world and India was under lockdown when the second season began on 15 May. I have done this season entirely from home, and you can probably tell from the occasional bird calls in the background. Just like this episode, I recorded the other 13 in the afternoons to coincide with the time when my cats are asleep. There, that was one of them, Dakini, who always has much to say about the world. But recording from home actually meant that my conversations with the experts were intimate and informal. They were chats, not interviews. My first guest was Shloka Nath, Executive Director of the India Climate Collaborative. She brought home to me the fact that what we are seeing with the pandemic is actually a dress rehearsal for climate change. Listen.
The world that we're experiencing now under the pandemic is the world that most climate change advocates or activists or, people working in the space of climate change have been really warning everyone else about. You know, the fact that global shocks are likely to increase, that we're going to be living in a world where you're going to see, these increasing health epidemics. I think we're facing something that we sort of envisioned a very, very long time ago in the climate change debate or arena. And this is something I truly believe from the bottom of my heart. The similarity between COVID-19 and climate change is that it's always going to affect the most vulnerable amongst us.
By the time the next episode came around, Cyclone Amphan had destroyed South Bengal and wreaked havoc in Kolkata. My guest was climate scientist Dr. Roxy Matthew Cole from the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology in Pune. He explained how a marine heat wave in the Bay of Bengal, caused by global warming, had, overnight, turned Amphan into a supercyclone.
Our research shows that, in this case, the Bay of Bengal was quite warm. Particularly, the Bay of Bengal has been riding on a wave of global warming trend during the past few decades. And recently, just prior to the cyclone, we witnessed temperatures between 30 to 33 degrees Celsius over Bay of Bengal. And these high temperatures might have played an important role in the intensification of the cyclone, because as you have higher temperatures, it will fuel more convection, fueling the cyclones. And what we saw was a rapid intensification from a Category 1 cyclone, that's about 100 to 150 kilometer per hour cyclone, to a Category 5 cyclone, that's about 200 to 250 kilometers per hour.
My next guest was climate change scholar and policy advisor, Professor Navroz K. Dubash, from the Center for Policy Research in New Delhi. As India opens up its economy after the pandemic lockdown, I feared that the government would go heavily for fossil fuels like coal to kickstart the economy and weaken environmental safeguards. Navroz said that this is a false trade-off, because weakening the environment will cause even more health risks and adversely affect the economy.
And I think we have to also remember that, you know, COVID kills, yes, and it causes a lot of destruction and a lot of stress on our healthcare system. But the kinds, but if you drop environmental safeguards,
right,
the resultant environmental harms also kill. I mean, let's not forget,
right,
that India, the Lancet says India has 1.2 million premature deaths from air pollution a year.
Right.
They may not be as visible as COVID. They may not. They may be crowded off the front page of the papers, but it's not like by dropping environmental safeguards, you're also not, I mean, you risk also further contributing,
right,
to precarious health and precarious livelihoods, right? So I think this trade-off idea is a little problematic, honestly. I think we need to move past that.
COVID-19 has shown us how important it is to have good, empathetic journalism that not only informs us, but takes the side of the marginalized and the vulnerable. When it comes to reporting on climate change, this will become very important for the Indian media. I spoke with award-winning climate journalist Aruna Chandrasekhar on the state of reporting on climate change in India. This is what she had to say.
On one level, we do not have organizations that have, news organizations that have specific climate beats, right? If you're looking at places and looking at outlets globally, you've got all of your different news outlets that have specific people covering or being a climate correspondent, and which is a luxury. But even the environment reporters, if you do look around, that they're asked to do a bunch of different functions as well. That is, if they do still have jobs in this media climate.
One of the things that really worries me about climate change is what kind of world will we leave behind for our children? They are the ones who will bear the full brunt of the climate crisis. But how do you speak to them about it? How do you communicate with them without alarming them or boring them? To understand this, I spoke with Bijal Vacharajani, an award-winning writer of children's books on climate change.
You know, I think firstly, accepting the fact that children are fairly resilient, they can handle the truth. So tell them the truth. It's important to share facts. Children are naturally curious.
Right.
And we, as adults, have to do this, but we can't be preachy about it, because the moment you're pedantic or you start talking down to children, they know it and they switch off completely. The other thing is, when you're talking to them about the climate crisis, it's also unfair to alarm them to the extent that they feel, oh no, I have to do something. No, they have homework to do. So don't place the burden on them, because making them anxious won't help. Instead, first listen to their concerns, answer them in the best possible way.
The only way to stop the climate crisis is by moving away from fossil fuels like coal to clean, renewable energy sources like solar and wind. While India has ambitious targets for renewable energy, it still wants to mine for coal. So where should India's energy priorities lie? I spoke with Dr. Arunabha Ghosh, the founder CEO of the Council on Energy, Environment and Water. He is also a co-chair of the Energy, Environment and Climate Change Track for India's new Science, Technology and Innovation Policy 2020. Arunabha said that the prospect for new jobs in clean energy is much higher than in coal. Listen.
The number one priority I would think policymakers today have in mind is jobs. But when you look at the jobs issue, we see that it is the clean energy space that actually creates far more jobs. You have the employment coefficient for solar, utility scale solar is 3.45 compared to 1.5 for coal. For distributed solar by rooftop, it's 7 times that number. So when we look at, say, less than 270,000 people in Coal India employed today, and we compare it with the potential of a workforce of 330,000 people with 160 gigawatts of solar and wind, even more if you have more distributed solar, even more if the renewables targets increase, I think the case becomes clearer and clearer that whether it's for jobs, whether it's for growth, or whether it's for sustainability, we have a very clear choice to make now.
The monsoon, which is becoming more erratic every year, has a profoundly important role to play in India's water needs. This is especially important when it comes to agriculture. India is an agricultural nation, but with changes in monsoon rainfall and other shocks, water, especially when it comes to agriculture, will become a critical subject. Now, very few people know as much about India's water needs as Dr. Aditi Mukherjee, who's currently the research group leader for climate change adaptation and resilience at the International Water Management Institute. This is what she had to say about the monsoon, agriculture, and climate change.
The largest consumptive user of water everywhere in the world is agriculture. This is especially so in India. 80% of our consumptive water use goes to agriculture.
Right.
We have always known, right? The fate of Indian agriculture is intricately tied with monsoons, in spite of irrigation and everything. So any change in monsoon affects a large section of our population. In fact, affects our entire economy.
Right.
And that's what climate change will do. It will change our hydrological regimes. It is already changing. And this would become more and more apparent as we move along, unless we do very serious mitigation, us and the rest of the world. So that's where the centrality of water lies, because people's livelihoods depend on it.
India's Environment Ministry published the controversial Draft Environment Impact Assessment Notification 2020 back in March. This draft massively dilutes environmental safeguards for industrial projects and has met with wide outrage all across the country. 21 lakh people have given their feedback to the government on the draft, most of which have asked for it to be withdrawn. I spoke with conservation biologist Neha Sinha, who's also an expert on environmental law. This is what she had to say about the connection between the environment and human life. When we degrade the environment, we weaken what gives us life. Then climate change comes along and makes it all much worse. Listen.
So, you know, we've already been degrading the environment since the Industrial Revolution. So there is actually a report, the IPBES report, which looks at, you know, how we have lost a lot of habitat and natural habitat. And the entire earth and the sea is kind of irrevocably changed forever because of our activities. But climate change becomes kind of the final straw. So what is happening is that we already have either polluted or made a lot of projects in these places, but then climate comes in and becomes the kind of last straw on the camel's back. And there's widespread cascade effect in which the entire ecosystem gets degraded. So the native ecosystem is the bulwark of our life on Earth. We don't just want green places. We don't want green deserts, as we call them. We need, we need diversity of native vegetation all over the world. And in fact, we need native vegetation even in water. And finally, ecosystem services, you know, the thing that we live on, you know, pollination and rainfall and, you know, all of those things that keep us alive spiritually as well as the provision for us, that gets affected by both our actions as well as climate change.
When we talk about moving away from an economy reliant upon coal and oil, we are effectively talking about moving to a clean energy economy. I spoke with economist Ulka Kelkar, the director of the climate program of World Resources Institute, India, about what such a new economy would look like. While talking about it, Ulka said that new energy innovations must be suited for India, its people, and its land.
Whatever we do has to be suited to Indian conditions.
Correct.
So EVs in India have to be more in terms of two-wheelers and three-wheelers rather than cars.
Right.
Another very interesting sort of insight that has come out from the recent pandemic is though, you know, when we were admiring the blue skies, outdoor air pollution went down in the lockdown.
Right.
But indoor air pollution from women cooking in the household went up.
Right.
So in a country where still biomass is being used, we need to make LPG cylinder refills
right.
much cheaper and easier to access for our rural population in particular.
Right.
We have to recognize that land is scarce, the land is ecologically rich, and it supports people whose livelihoods depend on the land.
Right.
So we should also go for technologies like rooftop solar PV, which are suited for Indian conditions.
In June, the Ministry of Earth Sciences released the first ever national assessment on the state of the climate crisis and how it affects India. The most important takeaway is that India's average temperature has increased by 0.7 degrees Celsius between 1901 and 2018. Since global heating is accelerating, in less than 100 years, it might increase by an unimaginable 4.4 degrees Celsius. That will make India completely uninhabitable. I spoke with climatologist Chirag Dhara, one of the authors of this assessment. He says that extreme heat waves and extreme rain are two outcomes of climate change that he is concerned about.
Now, heat waves have increased to a certain degree, but it's going to increase, according to climate models, substantially more.
Right.
So, for example, again, if we take a mid-emission scenario, what's called a mid-emission scenario, climate models are projecting that heat waves will increase by about 20% in length
right.
and about 2.5 times the number.
Right.
Okay, so very significant changes. On the other hand, climate models are also saying, although there's been a decline in the Indian monsoon rainfall in the past, with warming, rainfall is going to increase by about 6% by the middle of the century in a mid-emission scenario. Change in average, it's easier to adapt to that than changes in extremes.
Right.
And so a longer heat wave, as we are saying, as our report assesses, is going to happen, or more intense heat waves, higher frequency of heat waves, or a greater fraction of the rainfall coming down as intense rain rather than more uniformly spread out rain. These are the aspects which are of grave concern. Both to human health and to our food and water availability, security.
When we think of extreme monsoon rains, we think of floods and landslides. This year, there have been many, from Assam and Bihar in July to Tamil Nadu, Mumbai and Kerala in August. However, as my guest Amitanshu Acharya pointed out, much of the flooding is caused by our attempts to control rivers with dams and embankments. In this clip, he's giving an example of the floods in North Bihar. Listen.
Generally, in the monsoon period, in that region in North Bihar, the expected rain is around 11 to 12 mm. within 24 hours.
Right.
But they have noticed that has now increased to almost 300 mm to 400 mm.
Right.
Now, that's a massive amount of water coming in a 24-hour cycle.
Hmm.
And this definitely creates a problem in terms of the amount of water rushing in through the third, second, different degrees of streams towards the main water bodies in the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have embankments and dams becoming infrastructural amplifiers of this.
Right.
So the moment the dam or a barrage can no longer hold, it is going beyond its, you know, capacity to hold that water, it will release that water. And when a dam releases water, that's a huge surge of volume of water going into a river.
Right.
A river that has been curtailed on both sides at high speed.
Right.
And that is the perfect setting for a really severe flood.
My final guest for the season was Dr. Meenal Pathak, an environmental scientist and a member of faculty at the Ahmedabad University. She spoke about the future of Indian cities in the face of climate change. Now, Meenal is also a senior scientist with the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. In this next clip, she talks about how the world doesn't have much time to stop the climate crisis.
This is the decade of decision.
Right.
So the window is narrow and it's closing very rapidly. Of course, COVID has been a little dent, but largely the trends are showing that we'll just bounce back to where we were, right?
Right.
So I think if we don't take action in these 5 to 6 years, we might just miss the bus. And I don't really want to think about that scenario.
You know, I often think about how radically the world has changed and how fast since I was a child in the 1980s and 1990s. It was almost like it was a different world. Now I think about my niece, who's 6 years old, and how the world will be for her in 35 years, say in 2055. It will probably be a world of massive climate-related disasters year after year. Think of this pandemic and imagine if it happens every year. That is the threat of climate change. And stopping it is humanity's biggest fight. I shall leave you with that thought. I'll be back soon with a brand new season, new guests, and new learnings on climate change, the world, and India. Till then, subscribe to the Mint Climate Change Tracker on any of your favorite platforms, including Stitcher, Apple, Google, Spotify, or JioSaavn. Follow my climate change column and journalism in Mint Lounge with the hashtag Mint Climate Tracker. Today is Independence Day. Today, let's pledge to strive for a world where we can declare our freedom from climate change one day very soon. I am Bibek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next season. And remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.